American exceptionalism is alive and well.
And what it do? What is up? We are back. It's Tuesday afternoon here in Los Angeles. Another episode of the Cap Room. I am Ben Zepp, one of your hosts, joined by Niles Abston and Shakur Young. Guys, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I was right, and I love being right more than anything, so.
Today I'm finding out one of my co-hosts might be xenophobic. Like, I'm not sure what's going on. Like, there's revelations going on in here that I'm not putting together, but I'm doing great, man. We have another great guest this week.
Yeah, well, this is our third episode with a guest. This time we've stepped it up a little bit. We have a professional guest,
Right.
someone who gets paid to actually cover the NBA. Welcome to the Cap Room, Claire DeLune. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. I think that's the first time I've ever been called professional ever in my life. I kind of
Credentials.
pride myself on being not that professional, so it's nice. It's nice to cosplay as like a grown-up for an hour.
Same, same.
No, you are where we want to be, and that's to make a little bit of money, talking
Yeah, I
about
was
what
gonna
we
say,
love.
I would love to make a lot more money,
Right.
but I'm somewhere between, just sitting on your couch and like living in Malibu next to I was I'm trying to think of anyone who covers NBA who lives in Malibu and Amanda. Maybe Rachel does, but
Rachel
yeah.
Nichols.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I've actually seen her around in Malibu when I'm there. So I think she
Wait,
does.
seriously?
Yeah, I think
Oh.
she does live in Malibu.
I saw her at the, I mean, I see her all the time, but I saw her, the last time I saw her was at the RIP Clippers, last Clippers home game of the
R.I.P.
season.
Clippers.
And they were clipping so hard. And she had the hottest outfit on. And I like literally stopped her in the press conference. And I was like, girl, you look incredible. This outfit is so cute. It was like a lace, like a black lace outfit. And it was like kind of sexy. I was like, all right, girl. Like, all black to a funeral, but hot though. Like, with it.
Yeah,
Tell
Luca
them
sent the boys to Englewood.
Yeah,
them
maybe
boys
she
to
just.
Englewood and tell Rachel we need to jump back. Tell her that's what we need on Showtime. We
I
need the HUD
swear.
version of the jump.
Don't I
I
know
know she don't
it?
own the IP. We could figure it out. We could call it the tip off, nigga. We could figure it out.
I need to hit
Probably.
up her and hit up Amin Alhassan, who's another friend of
Oh,
mine,
Amin was great
and
on there. Love Amin.
and
Love me some
tell him to
Amin.
bring back the jump.
Hell yeah. I met Amin at the Comedy Store not too long ago.
Oh
He's really
yeah,
cool.
that makes sense. He's a huge like
He
comedy fan.
is.
also being, I don't like how you showing out in front of our guests. Like, Niles is normally the bougiest Claire, but that Malibu reference was very bougie from being. I didn't like it. I just had to
It's
call it out.
okay. I'm reporting live from East Los Angeles, so I'm not Malibu or bougie
Fam,
myself.
fam.
I mean, I am bougie, but not because I live in Malibu for other reasons. Because I have dried lavender in the background of my Zoom screen and natural wine behind that. So
You're also a singer as well.
I
So
am. She
like
sure is.
we're all artists somehow drawn to the NBA.
The longer I do the NBA stuff, the more I realize like that it's a myth that people are like a jock or an artsy person or whatever. Like everyone
Right.
I know in the NBA like wishes they're a musician or does art or something like that, or like is a huge fan of like huge movie buff or whatever. And everyone I know in music like low key loves basketball. So I don't know. I feel like
Yeah, like
the borders are blurry.
we got this one dude who's way more focused on his horses than winning. So,
I know. God bless him.
Wow.
God bless him. He's having a
Okay.
rough one today, I'm sure.
Yeah,
Yeah.
let's go into it
Get
right
it started,
now.
Ben, because he got me. He gonna get me hot early in the morning.
So
What
that was like the craziest thing we've all ever seen, right? Like I've never
Yes.
seen my jaw was on the floor. Like, and I thought
It's
Minnesota
the
was gonna
best.
win this
Oh my
series,
goodness.
but like it's like watching your childhood bully get bullied.
This
Like
is a
he
religion.
had my goat in the torture rack for 2 years straight.
Yep.
And Anthony
And
Edwards
that's what I
just
was saying
said,
last week, Claire.
no longer. It ends today.
It's been a
Anthony
religious
Edwards is a
experience.
hero. He's a
He is.
hero. He's bullying the bully.
It's amazing.
Like, build the statue of Minnesota. Like, if you haven't already started pouring the bronze or whatever it is you do to build a statue, make sure it's bigger than AI's and make it happen.
Mm. Anthony Edwards is just proving my point that Black people from the South, we just do everything better. It's just the truth.
I cannot argue with that. I truly cannot argue with that. Like, I think Minnesota is so lucky and so random that that's where he ended up. Because having lived there myself, like, just the whitest place imaginable. In some ways, they truly don't deserve his services. On the other hand, I can't think of a fan base that has suffered longer. Yeah. So,
I mean, since KG.
They deserve it in the sense of, like, my God, they have been through some shit. Like, if you look through some of their starting lineups over the years, you're like, how did they not get relegated? Like, it was so bad for so long.
Like, what was that one lineup they had, like, not too long ago? It was like, what was the big, they had a big.
I mean, they gave Andrew Wiggins the max. That kind of tells you everything you need to know about.
Yeah.
Was it Niang? Because they paid Niang a lot of money too. They loved him. Not Niang. What's my boy's name?
The European dude that got hurt. He was playing the five and K-Love was the four.
Pekovic.
That was unlucky.
Really thick guy.
Yeah.
Also, worst NBA draft decision in history. Like
09 draft. Mm-hmm.
Like, well,
Johnny.
No, the Steph Curry draft. They picked 2 point guards over Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
The Ricky Rubio one may be understandable considering he was super hyped at the time and he had a great career. He just got injured. Right. Picking Johnny Flynn over Steph Curry is like the basketball gods had to make them suffer for many years after that because that was just because that's the thing is like a lot of decisions that people make, you know. Hindsight being 2020, people are like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, there's people who are like, oh my God, like they passed up on Tyrese Haliburton in that draft. And it's like, people weren't really talking about Tyrese Haliburton like that. Like he's grown a lot, whatever. There are alternately some decisions people make in the NBA that immediately, it's like that Justin Bieber, like the meme where he's like, immediately, no, like I've seen what I needed to see. There are some decisions like that, and the Johnny Flynn over Steph Curry was one of those in real time. People were like, what the fuck?
What the fuck? Yeah. You got a dude who took...
LeBron went to Steph's, like March Madness game.
Come on.
Like, this was not a well-kept secret. Like, he was a very, like, touted draft prospect.
I went back and watched that tournament run on YouTube. There's, like, a whole compilation of that Steph Curry tournament run. It's crazier than you remember. Like, that Davidson team had nobody.
He had the Trae Young run first. Like, it was like,
yeah,
marquee. That was even crazy because we all knew Syracuse guys. We remember when Fab Melo came out and I ain't looked at a Syracuse guy since Carmelo. So I ain't even understand it. So, I mean,
they was playing 2-3 zone and shit.
Go ahead, Ben. Set us up.
I'm wondering, like, does Denver win a game? Are they going to get swept?
I'm saying it right now.
Calling the sweep?
Oh, we clipping this up, Claire.
Here's the thing. I was actually talking to some friends about this last night who are gambling degenerates like I am. Like, my drafting Johnny Flynn instead of Steph Curry moment is not just for as a flyer taking Minnesota sweep over Denver in this series. Just as like a fun little like $5 flyer or something, because it had to have been like plus 10,000 or something insane, and they're gonna sweep those bitches. They are morally, like, I've never seen a team just melt. It looked like what happened to the an emotional version of what happened to the Monstars when MJ took their powers back at the end of Space Jam. Like, just they melted down. Like, Jamal Murray was throwing heat pads at people. Like, Michael Malone was like spitting in a ref's face. He was yelling at him closely and hard.
They melted down fast,
and it didn't take much at all.
They was ready to crash.
Minnesota's first punch. It was their first punch. They saw their mortality, and not just that. I don't think they believe at all that they can beat Minnesota, and that's what happened to the Lakers actually, and that's why they lost 11 straight games to Denver, it's not because they didn't have enough to beat them. I mean, I've been banging the drum. Niles knows this. Like, I think like the Lakers should have won that first round series if they had a coach that knew how to make adjustments. But I think like the real stuff about basketball that people don't want to talk about, and I have a theory that it's because men don't like talking about their feelings, but is that it's so mental. It's so mental. Like, absolutely. And I'm not saying that Minnesota isn't the better team, because I do actually believe that they are the better team. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're more physical. But Denver now does not believe that they're going to get out of this series. Like, it's so clear. They are completely shook, like shook to their core.
I guess, and my question is, like, what do they do? Like, they kind of just play one way with, like, seven players. And, like, they're, like, beat this way. And no one could. And now someone can.
That's why they're going to get swept.
I don't think they have answers. I don't know what they would do.
There's no counterpunch. They have no one who can guard Anthony Edwards. Not a single solitary soul.
I was just about to say, this series changed dramatically, because I kept bragging about Aaron Gordon. That's when Niles talking about my Nas Reed moment. Because Aaron Gordon had Bron looking like, hey, man, come on, y'all. Aaron Gordon was out here balling over Bam last summer. And all of a sudden, now Aaron Gordon not fast enough to stay in front of Ant-Man. They put KCP on him. He moving. He gets in his spot as easy as he wants to on KCP. They don't even want that matchup no more.
You know what Anthony Edwards has that LeBron James doesn't have? 20 fewer fucking years on his tires.
That's
right.
This kid is 22 years old. Do you remember when you were 22? I would drink a Colt 45 and eat a Little Caesars pizza as my only food and nourishment for the day. And I would wake up at 7 a.m. the next day and feel like fresh as a daisy. Like nothing can hurt you when you're 22 years old. Like, you are impenetrable to the world. You are full of energy. Anthony Edwards could play a 90-minute basketball game at this age, and he would be fine.
Absolutely. And that's what brings me to my point I wanted to bring up today, is this has been a long con. Mr. Tim Connelly.
Come on now. Tim Connelly getting a lot of praise. Well-deserved. Look,
Tim Connelly put that Denver Nuggets team together, left before they won the championship, and then went to another place and said, I'm going to build the team to stop them. You know what I'm saying? So he knew what the Nuggets can't stop. He knows how to stop the Nuggets. Yeah. And so when he made that Rudy Gobert trade, we all were like, what the fuck are you doing?
I was so critical of that.
I was too. It seemed like the worst trade of all time. But what Tim Connelly knew was, I need bodies to throw at this motherfucker from Serbia. Yeah. And so it just took them a year to jail. And I'm sure in that locker room, in that front office, it was a lot of like, let's be patient. We know these pieces are going to work together. We just have to like figure it out and give it a shot. And while the outside world was telling them, you're the worst front office in the world, you just traded 5 draft picks for this French nigga that can't stay on the floor, you're idiots, they were like, no, this is going to work. We just need another shot at these guys. And then look what happened. They're up 2-1.
You know what he did? You know how your mom, when you were a kid, was like, I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it?
Mm-hmm.
He straight up did that to the Denver Nuggets.
That's funny.
He's like, I brought your ass into this world and I can take you out of it. And it's so badass. Also, Niles, hot take. I know, because I know, well, I at least know Niles is the other Laker fan on this call. Do you think that he really had the inception for this format of a team, not from building the Denver Nuggets, but from building the Denver Nuggets in response to, or filling out the Denver Nuggets roster in response to losing to the Lakers in 2020 in the bubble? Because that's my like galaxy brain theory, is that really what this Minnesota Timberwolves team is the blueprint from is the 2020 title team, because they were like top 3 or something in defense. They didn't have an incredible offense. They were big. They were strong. They were physical. They had a big man who could play a bunch of different positions on the floor. They had a freight train, like head of the snake, who could beat you on the fast break in transition and who you did not want to get in front of at all. Exactly. And they duplicated that to a T in Minnesota, but then also made everybody bigger around them. Like, they filled all those roles and they're like, okay, but what if all those guys were at least 6'9"?
Exactly.
What would that look like?
Yeah, because the name we not saying. What my boy Ansay, they got KD, but we got Jaden McDaniels. He was dead ass serious.
He was incredible.
That's Jaden Pippen.
He got Jaden Pippen got Jamal Murray looking like Eric Bledsoe, dog. He's shooting 3 for 18. He got playoff hard numbers. This nigga looks like a menace. At one point, Reggie Miller said it looked like it's 7 wolves on the floor at once. These niggas haven't let up 100 points yet in this series. They've only 80. Done it twice. They've Denver only done it twice in this 80 playoff. 80
points last night.
These niggas is they are menaces, y'all. The comparison is gonna get wild. 04 Pistons, 08 Celtics, they're gonna get wild. Cat also needs his flowers because we're talking about the Nas and the Gobert. Yo, Cat last night, him in slow mo, beautiful job. Yeah. Not only was Cat busting ass on offense, he was dogging on defense, bro. This nigga, yo, these niggas got 16 turnovers. Ben said they play one way. That Joker Murray, too, man, them two niggas got 16 turnovers in 2 games. These niggas don't know what to do. They turning defense into offense, nigga. They doing it beautifully. I ain't never even liked watching defense like this. That's the mental part of it. These niggas is locked in on these niggas not scoring, bro.
First of all, I don't know if this is recency bias, but I feel like that was the best defensive performance I've ever seen, considering like the stage, the stakes, considering like what it means to go up 2-0 when you're not even home court advantage. Like all of the stakes, considering their opponent and how unbeatable they seemed, like all of the factors in mind, like that was the most impressive defensive performance I've ever seen watching basketball. Second of all, the other factor that people aren't talking about that much that I think is actually a huge factor, and this is where I'm going to give myself a little bit of grace that I did not see this coming at all heading into the playoffs. I think the shift that the NBA made in officiating after the All-Star break played into Minnesota's hands perfectly, because they
let them boys play.
They're letting those boys play, and like to a point where it's like actually probably a little bit dangerous, like the amount of shit that they're letting go. But like Minnesota, I feel like it's the perfect storm because all these like other front runners have someone who's like either critically injured or like playing through an injury. Yeah. And then so they're already kind of like, you know, weak opponents in the hunt. I'm picturing like the safari where like the one, you know, like antelope or whatever has like a puncture wound in their leg. That's all their opponents. But then on top of that, the refs are letting the defense be so physical. And so that's Minnesota, I would say, is the best defensive team left in the field, right? They're not the best offensive team necessarily, but they're the best defensive team.
Yeah.
And that is beneficial to a defense. Like the way that they're reffing the game right now is in favor of the defense. They are reffing it as opposed to the offense. So I think that was a huge development. And I feel like I did not factor that into my postseason predictions at all when I was making them going into it. And that's where I feel like I really slipped up, is because like they were always going to let them play. They started telling us that, you know, 3-4 months ago.
Right. Yeah. And they beat the shit out them boys while the defensive player of the year was out being a father.
The quote unquote defensive player of the year. Can we talk about it?
Defensive player of the year was not there. Can we talk about it? Nah, don't you do that, Claire. You just saw that boy get switched on to Devin Booker last series, moving his feet. Now, I will say, I think in that next round, whether it's Mavs or OKC, that's the Gobert series where it's going to look crazy because they're going to try to pull that boy out. But nah, man, he dogging right now, man. This is serious. This is what he get paid the big buck for. This is what he get paid the big buck for. He wasn't even there.
Oh. Yeah, he wasn't even there to where I'm just like, was the trade even necessary? Like,
I'm not as far as you, because I would say that I do. Chris Finch said this in his post game last night, and I do agree with him to this degree that I think Rudy Gobert was a huge part of setting the defensive identity for this team.
Exactly.
That being said, I don't personally, if I was a voter, I don't have a vote. I've talked way too much shit on the internet for them to give me a vote, I would imagine. But but I think, to me, setting the defensive identity for a really good defensive team is definitely worth flowers, and it's worth a lot of credit. The defensive load that either Bam or AD have to carry on their own, to me, is a bigger load. Like, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of like all those years LeBron didn't get MVP. People were like, well, you had Kyrie, or you had this, or you had that, when really it was like, to me, he deserved it. In this case, it's like, all right, AD, who's around AD who's a good defender? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, what does AD have to work with in his personnel to like stop teams from doing anything? Whereas Rudy Gobert, we just talked about Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Anthony Edwards, quietly as it's spoken, incredible defender. Like, yeah, he's cooking dudes on offense. He's also an amazing defensive player. So Rudy Gobert is flanked by like four or five other great defensive players. And like, yeah, he deserves credit for getting them to that point. But like, to me, when I think of like MVP, when I think of defensive player of the year, I think of if you took that guy to like the Charlotte Hornets, if you took that guy to the Detroit Pistons, like what would he be able to do with that existing situation? And to me, there's no individually more impactful defender on his own on an island than Anthony Davis. That's my personal opinion.
She's good at this, guys.
Yeah. Let's focus on the teams that are in the playoffs right now.
Peter's gonna hate.
I will say
sound like my mentions. My God.
This Minnesota, like, they felt like a hive mind on defense. Like, they felt like a swarm of bees. Just like they were like more compact than like I've ever seen a defense, but somehow still making their rotations.
Yeah.
It was absolutely insane. Like, what do the Nuggets do? The only this is what also I've noticed in this series is that Jokic's rim protection is taking a hit because like these people are just all 7 foot. And like when it comes to Jokic, like protecting the rim against other 7 footers, like it just doesn't work. They are getting so many easy open layups in the paint. And I want to say you just got to play Aaron Gordon more minutes, but he leads the but he has led the team in like minus this 2 games. He was minus 23 and then minus 33 last game. Like they are getting killed with the Aaron Gordon minutes. I don't know what they do.
The first thing I would say is before I even give an answer to that question, like in earnest, I would say like there is nothing they can do. They are not going to win this series. The Denver Nuggets are not going to win the series. They are not equipped to deal with this Minnesota team at the level that they are playing right now. Regular season, sure, something different. This Minnesota team is the best team left in the playoffs by as they are currently playing with health, everything into account. So they're not going to win and there's nothing they can do. Theoretically, if I was the coach and I was trying to like think of something they could do, because you have to try, right? At least they just have to meet that physicality with physicality. They have to play whatever version of bully ball they can possibly play. Like, they are not going to out-execute, out-finesse them because the Minnesota defense is, like, throwing a wrench in everything that they like to do. So can they disrupt Minnesota's offense is what I you can't make your offense disrupt their defense. Their defense is going to, like, throw you off your axis. It's very clear that they have your number and they can stop it. But Minnesota, historically, not a great offensive team. They're making their jump shots. They're getting out in transition. They're doing everything they want to do on the offensive end too. And that's what you can't have. You can't let Minnesota's offense get what they want. So I would look at it from a different prism, not like how can we do what we want to do, but how can we try and do a better job of stopping them from doing what they want to do. And that would be, I think, their only shot.
Because what, Jaden McDaniels at what, 25 in game one? That can't happen.
Yeah, Jaden really?
Yeah, like 25.
Yeah, maybe some Peyton Watson. Can we get? I mean, Peyton Watson's young. I know that boy can't shoot, but
can we get some Peyton Watson?
But we gotta try him out though. Like them boys is just Ant and Jaden doing whatever they want. Let our young black dude do it. He go out there. Michael Porter just want to throw up shots.
Yeah.
Michael Porter looked like he finally, like all of the shit that he's been going through. I'm not trying to project, but the look on his face when he was sitting on the bench at the end of the fourth quarter, it looked like everything hit him at once. And he was like, holy shit, my life fucking sucks right now. Like he was like, it just all washed over him. And like, he had like a lucid moment because he was like riding the high of like gentlemen sweeping the Lakers and like, you know, everyone writing them in as like the next champ, like back-to-back championships.
He looked like fucking KD in round one. It was ridiculous.
It's like he took Molly and then he was like at the diner the next morning at 6 a.m. and he hadn't slept yet. And he's just like, wait, fuck, what did I do last night? Oh my God, I have a headache. Like Jesus Christ.
So like, I find this, it's hard to wrap my brain around like the defending champs with what we think is like the best player in the world right now already getting beat like after they just won the championship. Like this doesn't usually happen. with like NBA history.
Handedly like this, getting like, me handedly too. No, I was literally thinking about it because I want to say I was completely wrong. I do think this is over. I don't think they're sweeping them, but I think
it's gonna go.
They're not winning. Yeah, I think it's gentlemen's sweep.
Maybe a game.
Yeah, I think they're getting one of them at home, and that's just and it's over after that point. But I was literally thinking about when the Lakers, when AD got hurt in that 2021 series, and mm-hmm. the Suns beat them, and they went right to the mm-hmm. finals. And the same thing with the Celtics. The next year, Middleton gets hurt. They beat the Bucks in seven. They go right to the finals. So I mean, you've been saying it ain't no better defense. I mean, he might be the realest dog left. I mean, I was in my group chat last night saying he gonna expose my boy if we get there in the next round. I don't want to see Luka versus Ant-Man. I don't want to see him trying to pick up 94 feet, yelling at him the whole time, and Luka crying. I don't want to see nothing like that, dog.
Luka's just like still back yelling at the ref.
Yeah, just
doing
mad.
Like a fucking like windmill dunk on the other end.
Clapping. Yeah, I can see it now. My nightmare.
My thing about a gentleman's sweep is like, I could see that if it was flipped where, you know, the like Minnesota had home court advantage and Denver had lost two straight in Minnesota. Denver just lost two straight at home.
At home.
So yeah. Their next two games are both in Minnesota. And like having been to Target Center this year, Minnesota has maybe the best home court advantage in the league right now. Like their fans are crazy right now. It's going to be lit.
They got fake J Balvin in the front row. These niggas is up.
Cisco.
Dog.
Cisco lives in the suburbs of Minneapolis. He's going to be there with his silver hair. Like, fucking yeah. Alex Rodriguez is going to be there, like a one shade darker of spray tan than he was before. Like,
that is crazy to think about. They was defending like that in the altitude. These boys don't have good breathing.
Dude,
they're going to get to breathe.
That's like swimming with sandbags on. They're going to go home, take their sandbags off. All their fans are going to be there. Their family's going to be there. Then if you look at it like this, what if Minnesota wins game three? Then you're down 3-0. All you need to do is win one more game at home with their home fans. Like, Denver's only chance to win a game this series is the next game, is game three. If they don't win game three, they're getting sucked.
And Claire, he said he was out for blood last series. When he said, I done been sent home twice, I ain't never sent nobody home. He went for blood in
he
three
said,
and four.
I just want to kill everyone in front of me. Dude, I felt like I took like three pre-workouts when he said that. I was like, I could fucking run through a wall right now. Like, I just want to kill everybody in front of me. Like, this is the basketball I fell in love with. Like, yes, yeah. Fucking kill everybody in front of you, Ant.
Yeah, they're gonna know what's in front of them on Friday.
And Jokic, Jokic, they asked him at the end of the game last night in his post-game press conference. They were just like, you know, how do you feel going into the next game? Like, what are you gonna have to do, you know, to fix things? And he's just like, I don't really know. So I don't really know isn't gonna cut it against I just wanna kill everything in front of me. Like I saw a tweet this morning that I thought was such an astute observation. I think it was my friend Aaron Larsoul who said it, but he said, this is the moment where that style of leadership of that sort of like never too high, never too low, even keeled, like I'm just going to go chill with my horses either way, style of leadership that does work in some scenarios for Jokic. This is where it meets the limits of what it can accomplish because right now, you know who those boys need in that locker room? Anthony fucking Edwards. Like they need a guy to be like, we are not going down like this. Like we are the defending fucking champions and we're not going to go out like punks from some dudes from fucking the Midwest. Like we are going to go in there and we are going to show why we just won the championship and worked the entire league for 2 years. Like this is embarrassing. And I don't really know if they have a vocal leader like that besides their literal coach. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like who's in that locker room hyping these boys up? KCP? Like
DeAndre Jordan?
DeAndre Jordan, maybe. It's tough. I honestly feel like DeAndre, like, his off-court persona is not really, like, his on-court persona in that way. Like, he's such a chill dude. Mm. He's just, like, a nice, chill guy. Like, he's not.
I know it ain't Jamal Murray.
Definitely not Jamal Murray. It's definitely not Nikola Jokic. They need a spark plug, and they don't have one, really.
Him throwing that shit on the court reminded me of, like, playing, like, little league sports of, like, when the team of kids, they win all the time, finally get punched in the mouth, they throwing shit and crying in the dugout and everything. That was real immature.
He's like a toddler.
He's really showing me where he is right here.
He's more like Luka than he's not. Like early in his career, he would do the same thing Luka did. He was always looking at the ref, but he's more Luka than he
It showed me where he was mentally. And so it's just like, he's one of those guys that like, if we not winning, then I can't play. And yeah. That's not the type of guy you want on your team handling the ball every play down 2-0.
I've always said that, like, this is true in relationships. This is true on NBA teams. The true fiber of who someone is and also where your relationship stands with someone, it does not show when things are going awesome, when you're winning, when you're like making a shit ton of money and going out to fancy restaurants. Like, you find out who someone is and you find out how much they really love you and if they're really down for you when shit's not going right. You know what I'm saying? When you're going through hard times that like are inconvenient or uncomfortable or embarrassing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, these Denver guys haven't had a whole lot of adversity.
They haven't.
In like probably 2-3 years. So this is their first real adversity.
Right.
Honestly.
2-3 years ago, they were just a young team that had just gotten put together.
With no expectations. Yeah. Right. Well, not just gotten put together. I mean, like they've been together actually for a hot minute. Because I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the Aaron Gordon trade kind of put that core together of like, this is a playoff team.
The Aaron Gordon trade for sure. But I remember an interesting wrinkle in this Minnesota series is that, I don't know if you guys remember, and I think it's 2018. Mm-hmm. Minnesota and Denver had identical records. And this is before the play-in tournament. They played each other on game 82.
The Jimmy Butler game, yeah.
On the last game of the season to determine who was going to be the 8 seed who could make the playoffs. And Minnesota won that game with Jimmy Butler and sent Denver home. And honestly, to me, that was the catalyst for like Nikola Jokic's next step. Because I don't know if you remember, but at that time in the media, they were like, Nikola Jokic and Kat were being touted as like the same level, like rivals, like the big man on these sort of like opposing franchises. Obviously, yeah. Jokic has since far surpassed Kat in every metric. But so like, I think that was sort of Denver's villain origin story. But Minnesota hasn't forgotten that rivalry and like hasn't forgotten watching Denver go on from being their quote unquote division rivals, whatever, to going on to being the world champs. Like, I think there's more history there and there's more like bad blood than you might think, considering that Minnesota hasn't accomplished very much in the last few years. So
I think we'll pivot to, even though the Lakers, you know, should be irrelevant in the time like this, you know, we still got to talk about them. We're still interested in them. Claire has spent time around the NBA in person. She can get in the games. We can't. So we're kind of just, what are you hearing about the Lakers head coaching job? Anything? What are your thoughts?
I haven't heard anything new versus what's been reported as far as like what candidates they're considering. But I do kind of think, I mean, maybe I'll be wrong and JJ will get hired. I do kind of think their preference is to hire a non first time head coach, just because of how it did go with Darvin. But the coaching market, not great right now, as you guys have probably seen.
Really,
like,
not, yeah.
There's not a ton of like experienced coaches available. I feel like last year there were a lot. There's like a lot of reshuffling. And obviously the year where, sorry, that's a siren. It's probably really annoying. There's a lot of reshuffling last year. And then obviously the year that they did hire Darvin, you know, there was some more candidates available then as well. But yeah, I don't know. I don't feel awesome about any of their options, to be honest.
You don't like Bud?
I was just about to ask about Bud.
The problem with Bud is that Darvin is literally his protege. So Darvin worked for him on that Milwaukee championship team. And obviously it's better to have the better version of someone than like the great value version of someone. But I still feel like a lot of the things that about Darvin's coaching philosophy that I don't like, he learned from Bud. Like Darvin kind of has the same philosophy of like, you know, let people shoot threes. You're not going to like foul a 3-point shooter. So just like let them do their thing from the perimeter and like have more defensive mentality like in the paint, etc. And that just doesn't really work to me in the modern NBA. Also, Bud was really reticent to make adjustments in the playoffs. He got a lot of flack for that when he was with Milwaukee, which I think was honestly Darvin's biggest problem, is just his sort of his slowness and his reluctance to change. So I don't know. I think he'd be an improvement for sure. I just don't know if he'd be enough of an improvement, in my opinion.
That's right. I want them to go get JJ. So
I think JJ's honestly probably, he's in my top, he'd probably be in my top like three candidates that are realistically gettable. I mean, obviously Ty Lue would be the dream, but I just don't think whatever amount of money the Lakers offer him to try and get him away from the Clippers, like Steve Ballmer is just going to match that money. Yeah. Like, yeah, so I don't see it.
I can't believe Gil's Arena got that takeoff. It was the best take they've ever had on Gil's Arena, that little JJ Redick take. Oh,
shout
my
out Josiah.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Josiah.
Yeah, Ty Lue, I wanted to ask about Ty Lue because I'm like, we were asking last part, would Ty Lue be tired of this Clippers thing? Like, but I mean, shit, LeBron's a headache, dog. Like, y'all don't know, man.
I'm sure he is tired of it, to be honest. But I also think, first of all, the Lakers disrespected him with their original offer when LeBron first came to the Lakers. That's why Ty Lue isn't the coach of the Lakers. Like, they offered him the job, they just offered him, like, a disrespectful amount of money, and he was offended by that, and he then took the job elsewhere. I feel like that's hard to overcome. And then in addition to that, the Clippers job is pretty cushy. Like, I don't know, like, I feel like with the Lakers, it's very easy to, you know, take flack, underperform, to your point. Like, LeBron teams are always going to be on this in the spotlight, and the Lakers even more so. With the Clippers, like, if they had even made like a conference finals this year, he would have been looked at as like an overwhelming success. Steve Ballmer has super deep pockets. They just built a brand new arena. I feel like he has a lot of job security there. So I can understand why at a certain age, you're like, I'd rather just have the job that's like not going to stress me out as much. But I'm sure it's depressing to like have Ty Lue's skill set and then year after year not even be able to showcase it because you don't have all your best guys available. Like, that's got to be really frustrating.
Are we confident that LeBron is coming back?
I would say I'm like 85% confident. I think there's definitely a chance he leaves because I think there's a lot of things that have happened in his Lakers tenure that would give him reason to, like, the fact that the front office probably, I mean, allegedly, like, I don't have proof of this, but like allegedly leaked that it was his idea to go get Russell Westbrook when everything I've heard is that it was a very collaborative decision between him and the front office. That would piss me off if I was LeBron and they were like leaking stories after the fact that it was my fault. Their reluctance to sort of make moves at the deadline this year, when, you know, the golden opportunity was there, they just didn't really have enough size against Denver. So I don't know. I could see he has reason to leave. I just don't think he's going to. That would be
is him coming back basically conceding that he's not going to win another championship, because I really do not see like a LeBron-led team coming out of the West.
I mean, so I would say two things. One, it probably is true that like all of these older kind of superstars like Steph, LeBron, KD, it's probably more likely than not that none of them will win another championship before they retire. That being said, like, LeBron James, to me, greatest basketball player of all time. Like, there are arguments, very solid arguments for other players, obviously, but in my opinion, he's the GOAT. You don't get to that status without having like the world's most irrational confidence. So I don't think he's ever going to count himself out like as the best player on the team. Like, I think he's obviously smart. He obviously can see what's happening around him. I'm sure the wheels are turning as to what he needs to get over that hump at his age. Like, he's obviously self-aware enough to know that he can't play like hard-nosed defense 82 games a year and then have anything left in the tank in the playoffs. But I mean, even me personally, like, I wouldn't count out, you know, him having another chip. It's just that I don't think, because he and Anthony Davis were playing at an all NBA level this year. I think they looked like, you know, the two of the three best players in that Denver series by a very wide margin. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but I think you need young, athletic, big, rangy guys flanking them to take some of this abuse from, you know, teams like Minnesota if they're going to have a chance.
So he's not going to go to the Cavs then, you think? He's not going to go back to the Cavs?
I will dignify that with, I think that my personal theory is that he's done adding new teams to his resume. That's what I think. So I think if there's one thing LeBron cares about, it is legacy. It is, you know, the narratives, the story of his career. I think, and this is not based on any insider information or intel. This is just based on me observing LeBron for years. I think that if he's going to leave LA, it would be either for Miami or Cleveland. That's what makes sense to me. I guess I could see maybe by a stretch of imagination, if he wanted to join that Knicks team. I don't think the Knicks are going to make a move that big personally, just because this is like the happiest their fan base has been in 2-3 decades. But I could see him being like, I guess when you think about a destination for LeBron, what I would say is try and imagine where it fits in the story of his career. And if there's not like a good storytelling reason for him to go there, I don't think he would. Like, I don't think he would just go to, like, you know, pick a fringe contender just to try and chase a ring. If he was going to go to another team, it would be like, I'm going to help win the Knicks a championship in my last year before I retire. I'm going to reunite with Cleveland, or I'm going to reunite with Miami. Like, there would have to be some sort of narrative structure behind it. I think he's being a little more realistic about Bronny at this point. So I think it's going to be Bronny centric.
Yeah. Like ever since the Last Dance drop, this man has been obsessed with a happy ending. Like this dude wants the narrative. How does this play? And like,
I don't think it's since that dropped. I think it's been true. I mean, if not for his entire career, I would say for 75% of his career. I think he's very, very conscious of, you know, he's been famous since he was, you know, pre-puberty, basically. So he's very conscious of what, and he grew up, he's the first real big, like, athlete superstar of his caliber to grow up in the internet era and the social media era. So he's hyper aware of the narratives around him. And that's why, you know, there's been very few, if any, like, scandals around him or anything like that. Like, he cares a lot about his legacy, even beyond basketball. So I don't think that's Last Dance related. I think it goes back a little further than that, but
He hasn't picked a side in this Drake or Kendrick beef yet. He knows how that's gonna play.
He knows better.
Do you guys have any questions? I have more questions.
Hold on, because I want to ask, because Claire, you were at some of those Clipper playoff games versus the Mavs.
Yeah, I was at all the home games.
At all the home games. I want to ask you, did PG and Harden, did it look like they quit in game 5 and 6 to you? Like,
I don't. Okay, so this is actually funny, because I remember after, what was that game? Was it game 4 in Dallas, where that was like a crazy offensive battle that was just like shot making on both sides?
Yeah.
I remember a friend saying to me after that game, like, wow, who would have thunk it? James Harden, like, showing up in the biggest, most important moment for a team in the playoffs. And I was like, oh no, I don't know if you've been paying attention. Game 4 is like peak James Harden in a playoff series. Like, that is exactly when he shows up. Mm-hmm. It's games 5, 6, and 7 that he's a no-show. Like, it's the first half of the series is James Harden's like bread and butter. Like, he's always incredible in those games. So I wouldn't say they quit. I have a lot of respect for any athlete of this caliber at this level, especially to be in the NBA period. You have to be one of the best basketball players in the world, and I think people forget that. To be a superstar in the NBA, you have to be at a level of exceptionalism at what you do that is like beyond what any of us could even comprehend in our line of work. Like, you have to be so good. So I would never like disrespect someone at that caliber by saying, oh, they don't want it, they quit. All these guys want it. You know what I'm saying? But I do think that they were, when the Clippers were playing at their best, Kawhi is the star of this team. Like, it's fundamentally, he's supposed to be the number one option. And I think Paul George and James Harden at this point of their careers are both better suited as 2 or 3, pick an order, on a, you know, serious team. And I don't think that they have like the right vocal leader in the locker room. I don't think that it's even Ty Lue himself is like, he's pretty even keeled, laid back guy for the most part. So I don't think anyone was able to step up and be that number one. Mm. And I think that they can both play exceptionally well for a game or two at this point in their careers, but I don't think either of them has the juice to step into Kawhi's footsteps when he's not there. Like, that team does not work if Kawhi Leonard isn't healthy. And that's the fundamental problem with that team, is Kawhi Leonard is often not healthy. So you're not going to make a deep playoff run to me with those three as your top three. And I personally think Paul George is probably gone this summer, but.
I'm telling you, he's going to Philly.
That would be the right move for his career. The problem is he's from this area, from the greater Los Angeles County area. He's not from LA, but I do think that the lifestyle stuff does matter to these guys, like more than they would care to admit. And I think he's really happy to be back home in Southern California. So especially like, you know, later in his career, but from a basketball perspective, I think he'd be perfect for Philly. And I think that would be the smartest choice for him as far as like chances of winning a title.
And he could do that. Go ahead. I was just about to say, and he could do that little podcast over there, JJ shit. You could, you know what I mean? You catch that train up to New York. You know what I mean? You could do podcast P with JJ. You know what I mean? I mean, it's almost.
I was going to say, I mean, look what Tyrese Maxey is doing with Tobias Harris asleep. So you got Paul George on the court.
That Tobias Harris contract, man, like, it's unbelievable what that guy got paid to do what he did this year.
That's my anti-capitalist king.
That's what I'm saying. He does not dream of labor. Like, look, respect.
I'm with it. Tobias Harris, socialist icon. Stamp it.
Yes.
Yeah. I have one more question before you got to go. This is more like a philosophical, like, journalist question. Specifically about, like, NBA, but like, do you think like locker room access is necessary for like journalists, sports journalists to like do their jobs?
It's certainly helpful, just because I think there's something about getting in front of a podium and answering questions to a room of people that just changes the calculus, you know, versus like, let me put it this way. The scrums in front of everyone's locker where there's microphones in their faces and like it's basically like the podium, but at someone's locker, take it or leave it. Like that doesn't actually, nothing that serious gets accomplished there. Mm. But the thing about locker room access that, you know, isn't as obvious to maybe the outside world is that like they open up the locker room for like periods of time before and after the game. When there aren't even scheduled speakers or like people who are supposed to have availability, the locker room's just open to the media. It's about like 45 minutes, I think, before the game and after. And it's informative sometimes, you know, observing like how guys interact with each other or like, obviously you're not going to like report on things that you overhear and stuff in the locker room, but you know, it's informative for like telling a story to kind of see what the vibes are like. Like I reported, I thought it was super interesting. Before Lakers game 4 against the Nuggets, the one that they won in the series, I was in the locker room before the game and spirits were super high. Guys were in a really good mood. And they seemed excited and happy. And being down 0-3, like that was really surprising to me. Like I was like, I don't know if this means anything, but I was just in the locker room and spirits are good and guys seem like they're in a great mood. So like they ended up winning that game, you know? So I do think like stuff like that, it is helpful for storytelling purposes, but I also get that it's invasive and, you know, like guys are in towels and stuff. So, you know, you have to be respectful and give guys space. But I do think that it is beneficial for telling the story. I honestly think it's probably way more beneficial than like if they got rid of the post-game availability at the podium where they're getting asked these like perfunctory questions. Like, I don't really know how much is gleaned from that for the most part. Like maybe one out of every 5 press conferences, something interesting happens.
People subscribe to your podcast to talk to you.
Oh my God. I mean, that was so abhorrent, but my hottest take as a journalist, and I'm sure other journalists would hate that I say this. I don't think that it should be mandatory to give a post-game press conference if you lost. I think it should be optional. I think
that's a hot take.
If guys have something like, cause maybe they want to explain, maybe they want to speak for themselves. Maybe they want to say, okay, this is what went wrong. Or like, or they want to say like, I just want the record to say that we are excited for game 3 and we're going to come back like never before, whatever. The floor should be theirs if they want to speak, but it's like the only job in the world as an athlete where like at your lowest moments, like you're forced by contract to come up with something to say. Like I tried to explain it to one of my other media friends why I believe this. And I was like, okay, I'm a musician, right? So I've forgotten a lyric on stage before. It's not often, but it has happened. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine like forgetting a lyric and getting off stage and going to the merch booth and having like 10 different reporters in your face with microphones? Like, so I noticed you forgot a lyric on the third song of your set list. Could you just walk us through what happened there and why that happened and how you're going to make sure you don't forget a lyric at your next show? And was it something about the environment of this particular venue that you think like, or was it just because the guy in front of you who played before you was so good? Was it just like really intimidating? And like, that was it. Like, we don't do this to anyone else. So
comedians, we do it to each other.
So I don't think it should exist unless guys have something that they particularly want to say, because most of the time they're not going to say anything interesting or of note. The journalist is like, how does it feel like to lose? And they're like, it feels like shit, you know, like that's what you get. And then if they do happen to say something interesting, it's kind of like gotcha journalism. It's like you kind of just like cornered them when they were at their most vulnerable and like got them to say something interesting that they didn't even really want to say. So yeah. I don't know. That's my first.
I will disagree with you for this one point. If it wasn't mandatory, we would have never got the LeBron calling everybody broke moment.
Man, y'all got to go so back true. To y'all regular lives. And so does. Hey.
That's true. We've gotten some pretty legendary quotes. And it also is telling, like, Jamal Murray hasn't spoken to the press once in this Minnesota series. He's declined to speak to the media after both games. I think that's pretty telling about sort of like the DNA makeup of a team, to your point earlier about, you know, how they respond to adversity.
So what are the rules? There are benefits. Like, how often can you decline? Can you always decline?
You can never decline. You get fined. Yeah.
Oh, so he's just taking the fine.
Yep.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of the collective bargaining agreement that they have to speak to the media. I mean, no one would ever speak to the media ever if they didn't have to. Absolutely. You know,
he ain't talk because he didn't want to talk about throwing that shit. And
well, what about game one?
Oh, he didn't talk after game one either.
No, he hasn't spoken after either of these games. He's declined media availability both times in true Dylan Brooks fashion. Yeah, it's some ho shit for sure.
Yeah, he a hoe.
All right. Let Claire get up out of here, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
All right. It's sad to see you go. Right, we really enjoyed this.
Much. Yeah, that was really fun. I'm definitely down to come back later in the playoffs if you guys
please do
want to debrief on the Minnesota Timberwolves championship or anything like that.
Anyone who's listening, go read Claire at The Guardian, her latest piece. Did Darvin Ham cost LeBron James his real chance as another NBA title? We love LeBron propaganda on this show, so we will take all of it. It's never LeBron's fault. It's never LeBron's fault in the cap room.
You're not going to send me off with no.
Being a Cavs fan, he's
absolutely salty. Not. You're so salty. This was not LeBron's fault is all I will say on the matter. And if you want to read more about why, you can find the piece on The Guardian.
Okay. Thank you, Claire.
No problem.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
That was good. Knicks
Pacers.
I gotta talk about the NBA's agenda right now.
Okay, go ahead.
Look, man, I know we need the big markets back. I know Denver and Minneapolis aren't the places Stephen A. Doesn't want to go live, and Pat McAfee don't want to set up out there and shit like that. But look, man. What I saw last night was egregious. Bro, the Knicks are good, but goddamn, they don't need this much help to beat a 6-seed Pacers where Tyrese Haliburton don't even score 10 points. Y'all need all that help? And it's making me think about that game where they clearly fouled Tyrese Maxey on that inbounds pass. They clearly fouled him, and then they get that wide open DiVincenzo three. And my other thing is like, why do all these moments always just end up in a DiVincenzo three? And all the time.
Hey, I said that last night. I said, out of nowhere, Josh Hart flies out of nowhere, grabs a rebound, and DiVincenzo be wide open for
every
a three.
Every time.
No, they've had questionable calls all year. I will say, that offensive foul, it reminded me of that Aaliyah Edwards offensive screen in Elite Eight in the women's tournament when he's watching it.
And she was moving way more than Miles Turner.
And it just feels like you can't call that in that moment right there.
I didn't think Miles Turner moved that much.
And
this is my opinion.
The Knicks, all right, I'll say this too, because the Knicks haven't been getting those kind of calls all year. And Claire kind of hit it on the head. Like, the more they've let these guys play and muck it up on the defensive end, that has favored the Knicks without Julius Randle so much. And I think Julius Randle would have benefited so much from it too. But this is like the perfect style clash with the Pacers and the Knicks, because the Pacers like to get up and run. This is young, fast team. They like to get up and fly up and down. And this Knicks team want to drag it into the mud. They want to play half-court basketball. They want to try to beat you up. And, yes, at the end of that game, that was nasty. But Jalen Brunson made shots down the stretch.
He did.
Down 5, 109, 104 with 3 minutes to go, big three-pointer. Just straight up, you know what I mean? And some of the plays that go their way, there is always going to be plays that go that way. Notice, it is the play. It's always going to be one call or this call. It's going to be that. But I think this is a beautiful style clash. It's like the Pacers' depth spoke volumes last night.
How many points off the bench? 45?
46 to 3. They scored 46. And this is, you know, Tibbs likes to play seven guys. I mean, two of his guys is out with Bogdanovich and Randle.
He barely played seven guys.
Four guys over 42 minutes.
Because McBride didn't play.
And nobody played over 40 minutes for the Pacers. And I thought Obi Toppin should have played a lot bit more. This was like an Obi Toppin revenge gotta play more. Game. He hit that East Bay at the end of the third quarter. I said, oh, this nigga hate that motherfucker Tibbs.
A stretch four is a good matchup for that Knicks team, because Hartenstein, he can't guard a stretch four like that. And he's big enough to where if they got to put like OG on him, that leaves a wing on the Pacers that doesn't have to deal with OG anymore. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like a stretch four that can get to the rim, shoot the three, that's a good guy to have on the floor. They got to play more minutes.
I wrote down, can we see some OB and Siakam together? I think that was the problem Tibbs had, not wanting to play OB and Randle together. And I think OB has shown the ability. I mean, and also – you need to apologize to TJ McConnell. Ben was right. This is floor raiser.
Hey, no, that was TJ McConnell. Series.
And he was good in the last series. TJ McConnell.
He was fine.
The floor raiser. I mean, we talked about Ben Shepherd in the first round, but like guys like Neesmith, I want to see Neesmith guarding Jalen Brunson more. Nimhart cannot handle him. Get Nimhart off of him. We saw Oubre give him problems. Size does give Brunson problems. You cannot just allow him to cook you. Josh Hart might be Iguodala. You are right. The Villanova boys are
Josh Hart saves that game.
Yeah, they are amazing. Always in the fourth. Their biggest plays always happen in the fourth. Dante and Josh. I don't know what it is, especially them two at home.
Like,
and I
do Josh think, Hart 24-13-8. Like, if you would tell me Josh Hart
12
is
12 rebounds,
he's like sniffing triple doubles now. Like, what the hell,
bro? He kept them afloat until Jalen Brunson just went nuclear in the fourth, because I took the under on Jalen Brunson yesterday, and I was so happy going into the fourth quarter. And I mean, this nigga just said, hey, Niles, you're not getting that $90, nigga. I couldn't believe it. I mean, every time down the floor, it was either Jalen Brunson got fouled or he made a mid-range jumper. Every play.
He is surgical. I am almost just excited to see him versus Boston. But I want to say, too, I thought this was a Knicks and gentlemen sweep. This is going to be a long series.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
They're doing this without Halliburton, because I do got a Halliburton question in a second. But they are doing this speaks depth to, volumes to the depth. I do want to see Carlisle play a little bit more chess, and I think he will going down the stretch of this. Is Halliburton hurt? Is he just hurt?
I don't know, man. He only took six shots.
At one point, I didn't want him out there. I wanted more TJ McConnell.
Right. And I'm not a TJ McConnell guy. And I was like, man, they might as well just put TJ McConnell back in this motherfucker, because he going to the rim. I mean, TJ was just like, tween, tween, like fast break in the half court, off the screen, just getting to the rim. And Halliburton was playing very passive.
And it's not that he's not getting his assist number. I think he's such a great passer. He's always going to get his assist. I think even when he was playing on De'Aaron Fox, he could do that. But it's about again, Ben was saying it in the first round, he's not hitting the step back, but he's also just not getting to the rim and penetrating more to open more stuff up. Like, it took a big Miles Turner game, big Obi Toppin points off the bench, and an incredible TJ McConnell game, and Siakam down the stretch to pull this off.
They have to make
to not pull this off. They still lost it. Yeah.
They have to make Jalen Brunson play defense in the fourth quarter. They have to hunt his ass, because he has too much energy when they get the ball on the other side of the court. Somebody has to go at him.
You hitting it on the head. And if Halliburton can't do it, they don't have the guard. Ben Shepherd and Nimhart. Right? This is where they're missing Ben Mathurin. Crazy enough.
Yeah. Right.
What injury? So what's up with him?
Oh, he's out for the season for some reason.
He's done. Yeah.
Fuck.
I do think this still could be a longer series, though, because if one-legged Embiid gave them problems and Carlisle's gonna try to play 8-9 guys, you know what I mean?
Big minutes. That's what I'm saying. Like, if I'm the Pacers, I think I just run it back game two, and it's just like, Tibbs, if you want to play six guys, like, we're just gonna run.
Why I said it's the perfect style clash. So this could go. I wanted to. You know, like I tried to change my prediction on the Minnesota. I was like, man, I'm ready to go. I still think Knicks can pull this off, because if the officiating is going to go like that, I think they can always drag you into the mud and pull those type of games out, because they got a Jalen Brunson guy who is going to get some of those. You saw it in that Philly series. When he's getting you on your back, those Trae Young calls that's supposed to be out, Jalen Brunson still gets those for some reason, that little stopping. But, hey. I do think this is going to be a longer series. I do think we're going to see this might go 6-7 games. So,
and I think Miles Turner has a good matchup here too. He had 22.
And I thought those guys was going to rough Miles up, but Miles, you know, he don't even like going down there. He like, oh, see, I can get them rebounds. I'm trying to.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, we got a couple more series previews tonight.
Let's do yours first, not me.
I guess, like, the least interesting of the series, Cleveland-Boston. We won game seven, and I was like, okay, that's cool.
You said it on Friday they were going seven. You said, I'm glad I'm off Sunday. And you were even – in that second quarter, when it looked like it was over, you were already, like, before that, saying, yo, I could feel it today. We about to lose. Yo, the Cavs look like a team that's ready to go home.
Yeah, that's – it's just so weird because, like, when the Cavs are in the playoffs, usually, as my fandom, we've had LeBron, and we just know we have a chance to win a title. And, like, I just don't feel that way with this team. So I guess I'm just rooting for that they just don't get embarrassed and maybe take two games.
I got Celtics in five, but
Celtics in five.
I got the Cavs winning game one.
Oh. Okay. Oh, I forgot to say this. Dean Wade spotted warming up. He could be back this series.
Uh-oh.
Dean Wade, the Celtics killer.
That was our favorite segment when he turned into Klay Thompson. When right. Dean Wade turned into Klay Thompson, that was different.
Can't fuck with Dean.
Wow. I am more excited to talk about the Cavs in the offseason, because I think there's going to be a coaching change. Because teams that get put out in the second round, I think Bill and them said it, you still got the same problems if you was going to get put out in the first round. So that's a great hot take.
Yeah, I'm just
I hope they win game one. I think they'll get a game at home. I don't think they're getting one of these in Boston. I'm sorry.
I just
see that Celtics team is like, there's just that team that they just lose games they're supposed to win.
No, that's what's gonna happen in the Garden. That's what Adam Silver wanna see, Tatum melt down in the Garden. You know that's gonna be beautiful. The Knicks niggas booing him. Tatum sucks. Fuck. Yeah, that is gonna be great. All right, yeah.
But the thing is, I think they're already thinking about playing in the Garden. And that's why I think the Cavs could steal game one.
Yeah, well, I mean, Donovan Mitchell has played a fantastic last two games.
Yes, he has.
I've been impressed how easy it's been.
Yeah, I am sorry, Spider. You've been balling. You've been playing your ass off. And shout out to Paolo. Go ahead, like, with the next seat.
It's not like the Magic D is suffocating. It's really hard. But it's not like the Celtics D is any walk in the park. And if we can barely get over 100, I mean, I don't think our defense is that good enough to like stop this Boston team that is just three-pointer drive kick. I think they're gonna run us ragged. We'll see. I mean, we've always played well against Boston. Caris LeVert loves to play against Boston. Without Porzingis, hopefully we get Jared Allen back. We have a little bit of a size advantage. Who knows? But I have no hope. So Thunder, Mavs, we got a couple more minutes left. Boy, I'm kind of just rooting for like what team is going to be the better matchup against the T-Wolves. Like that's what I'm kind of looking for.
That's funny as hell. I am scared as hell, y'all, of Lu Dort. He just made Brandon Ingram look like he was back in FIBA. Maxi Kleber is out, and that was some of our beauty of some of the matchup problems we can go, because the five out versus five out with Chet is going to be nasty. But this is a Jason Kidd series. Mark Bagnall is incredible. I think Kidd did great when he put PJ off of PG and put DJ on him and let Kyrie initiate some of that offense later in the series. I really want to see. I think this comes down to simple. This second round, man. Our two stars, go hunt Josh Giddey, get that nigga off the floor, and bully Chet off the floor with Gafford and Lively. Don't even make this a maxi series. This should be a Dante Exum and PJ X Factor series. They're going to be big. And more Kyrie. Everything Kyrie is doing is
beautiful. I was going to say that.
More Kyrie. I got Mavs in seven. This is going to be tough as hell. Shea has nothing to play with. I just saw what Lu Dort did. Jalen Williams. Now, Jalen and Lu Dort going to bother Luka. I'm not worried at all about Kyrie. I know what Kyrie do. Now, I get it, Ben. I'm never worried. I feel so good. I don't know. I just know it's good. If the games is close, I got Kyrie. I ain't even saying I got Luka no more. Kyrie the close. This nigga Kyrie so good. I wanted to go to the finals just so Kyrie can get finals MVP and me not be mad. Like, I told y'all it was Kyrie. It was the whole playoff.
That was in my notes. Kyrie in all caps.
Yeah, we need more Kyrie hounding on defense, diving all over the floor. Like, that is like, oh, he has been a dog. And he got the other guys playing like dogs.
When you think about it, between the two teams, that's who has the most playoff experience. This is a guy that went on a historic playoff run with LeBron James. He knows how to win a game in the half court. He knows how to win tough playoff games. He won possibly one of the greatest game sevens of all time. I think his experience and like his focus, I think that's the edge the Mavs have. I got Mavs in six.
Mavs in six. I'm going to pick the Thunder in seven. Really?
I'm not picking nobody against Luka.
Do the Thunder even get a rebound on this team though?
I think, are we concerned at all about the Maxi probably being out for the series?
I am very concerned because that's where my rebound that comes in. Maxi has been incredible. His shot was coming back. Oh, my goodness. And at this point, we got to get to the end of a conference finals to get him back. So, but I do – Gafford and Lively came alive in the second half of that series. Like, them boys grew up fast. Like, and I think they are going to bully Chet out of this. And I think Kyrie and Luka are going to hunt Josh Giddey. And if you're going to try to bring Isaiah Joe out there, we are going to hunt him. This is matchup hunting season, and hoping Derrick Jones Jr., Exum, and motherfucking PJ can stay as locked in as they was in the first round. A lot of Josh Green, too.
Okay. We got to wrap it up, guys. That was another episode of the Cap Room. I think we'll be back again this week. We're kind of bi-weekly at this point.
Yeah.
The way it's going.
It's too much good stuff going on, man. We got to talk about it. Yeah. I'm excited. I think Cleveland takes game one tonight, and I think Dallas takes game one in OKC. I got both the road teams today.
I think Dallas got game one, but I got Boston tonight.
All right. All right, peace out, guys.
Stop the cap.